production of Minnesota Public Radio.
Watch yourselves. Increase speed, full throttle.
We're right behind you.
R2, that stabilizer's broken loose again. See if you can't lock it down.
Look out! TIE Fighter, right behind us.
I'm hit. Losing control. I can't hold course.
Well, get clear, Wedge. You can't do any more good back there.
Sorry, Luke. The tires aren't following. They're staying on you. The lead is flying some kind of prototype ship.
Hurry, Luke. They're coming in much faster this time. I can't hold them.
R2, try and increase the power.
The lead is lying to me. Luke, I...
Biggs? Biggs? Hang on, R2.
Luke, 30 seconds left.
Targeting computer. Locked on.
As soon as I heard about the idea of adapting the first Star Wars film as a radio show, I was very, very interested. Obviously, it is a labor of love. It's an opportunity for me to work in a medium that has been denied me simply because of my age. I mean, I've read so much about the golden age of radio and that whole realm of theater of the imagination.
Mark Hamill stars as Luke Skywalker in National Public Radio's production of Star Wars.
The idea of taking the first film, a two-hour film, and making it 13 half-hours is phenomenal. It's just, it's much more in-depth. It's fascinating.
The making of Star Wars for radio. A fable for the mind's eye.
Well, when I first saw the film, I think one of the things that struck me most about it was the sound score that came with it.
Richard Toscan, the executive producer of Star Wars.
The visuals were exciting and interesting and all of that, but I guess to me I was even more fascinated by the sound effects and the use of music and everything, which seemed as innovative to me as anything that was done visually in the film. So that's what originally suggested to me the fact that it could be a highly successful vehicle in a purely auditory kind of form.
This story actually begins with Richard Toscan's suggestion that a radio series be produced. With the cooperation of George Lucas, the creator and director of the Star Wars film, and of the staff at Lucasfilm, the project moved ahead.
They had all, or at least a number of them, had quite an interest in radio, being a fascination that George Lucas and Gary Kurtz and several of the key people at Lucasfilm had. So they were very receptive to the idea, particularly since a number of them were graduates of the University of Southern California. And since this was being done through KUSC in Los Angeles, the university, of course, owns the license, and they felt that by donating the rights for radio dramatization to KUSC, they were doing something that was nice for the university, as well as being able to offer a real possibility to public radio.
The possibilities were immediately apparent, it seems to me, because here is something that really is a perfect radio drama in the first movie.
Frank Mankiewicz is the president of National Public Radio.
One of the stars of the film is the soundtrack. I mean, that's one of the reasons people were drawn to it and attracted to it and came back time after time, is because of the brilliance of the soundtrack and of the music and of the special effects. And we've blended those into the radio program. As you'll hear when the program goes on the air, there's just nothing like it.
This is all R2's fault. Demented little twerp. He tricked me into going this way. He'll do no better.
I actually feel it's one of the most creative mediums there is, because it's... works in the mind. The problem with film is that it's very much what the director and the cameraman have chosen for you to see. If they want you to look at a close-up of somebody's thumbnail covering 70 feet of screen, you have no choice but to look at that. In radio, you can sit there and you can make the scenery how you want it. You can develop the visual side completely inside your head. And therefore, it's stimulating. Therefore, amount of enjoyment you get is reciprocal to the amount of effort you put into it, and you have to put a lot of effort if you're listening. And that's why the plays are enjoyable.
Anthony Daniels, who played the gold-plated interpreter droid C-3PO in the Star Wars film, recreated the role for radio.
Stop! Please stop! Oh, you crush me! Oh, oh, oh. They stopped. Goodness.
People have said to me, how can you do Star Wars on radio and all those effects? In fact, they miss the point that it'll be, in a way, better to do it on radio because the effects will be stunning, the sound effects. And, sound effects, rather like smells, are very evocative. You remember sounds and you remember smells. And, you can sit at home and have the whole galaxy whizzing around your head.
Yeah. What are you doing? Let go! Oh. What's that? No, not a restraining bolt. No. Haven't I been through enough? What are you doing? Stop pushing. What do you want me to do? Stand here under this conduit, like so. Might I ask what you're going to do?
Daniels brought considerable radio experience to Star Wars, having worked with the BBC. But performing for radio was something new for many of the actors.
To only concentrate on voice, to only exist through your voice, does free you in a way because you have one area that you're working on. It's physically more exhausting than doing film. I think because the breaks, there are very few breaks. We shoot a large section at a time or tape a large section at a time.
Perry King played the part of Han Solo, a hotshot pilot hired by Luke and Ben Kenobi to get them off the planet Tatooine.
Yeah, we put so much physical effort into being there by the mic. I mean, it's the difference between my talking like this and the difference between my talking like this, you know. I always, if anything, I think I put almost too much energy into it. I get carried away a few times. John Madden, the director, has had to calm me down and pull me back.
It's terribly important that the information that he's come to give you does not have to play over the land speeder. It's just very damaging to him.
In a Hollywood recording studio, director John Madden works with actors Mark Hamill and Cale Brown. Madden, a veteran of BBC drama productions and National Public Radio's Earplay series, concentrates on helping actors imagine the final scenes.
We record everything separately. We record the dialogue tracks first. All the sound, the background sound, the local sound, all the various layers of sound, which in a project like this are infinite almost, are then added later. When you are where so much of the total picture that is eventually going to be created has to be added afterwards in terms of sound, the actor's performance becomes the tip of the iceberg, and the rest of it has to be imagined. So that, when you're dealing with a scene where a specific thing is happening, somebody's getting inside a land speeder, you know, a test of the actor's skill really is how effective they can be at actually creating the human component of that sound picture. It got to be known in the recording sessions as effort. I would ask for a little bit of effort from somebody, which meant that when Luke was getting into a land speeder, he would say, come on, 3PO, it's about time we got on the way here. So that the effort would be in the voice. And if that component is actually in the voice, when you add the sound of that happening, it will immediately read as that happening. Now, that's something that an actor...
Get in, Windy. Time's wasting. I don't expect to have another whole free day until the moisture harvest is in.
Okay, now you just need a little effort there as you get into it. So, yes, that's it, exactly.
She sounds smooth.
She's smooth sound, Luke.
She sounds smooth, Luke.
Now, this is where you need to really raise the voice way up.
Okay.
Unrealistically high in here. Much higher than you'd think, actually.
She sounds smooth, Luke. Yeah, I worked on her all day yesterday. Well, listen, if you're planning to do any racing, you can count me out, Skywalker. Tatooine is no academy, and you're no star pilot. Not yet, anyway. I adjusted the thrust sequence for extra boost. Hang on to your seat. Now, do you want anything going off?
Yes, absolutely. Just hang on to your seat, and then there should be a whoa. I mean,
it's like a dune buggy or something.
Absolutely. And the thrust.
She sounds smooth, Luke. Yeah, I worked on her all day yesterday.
Well, listen, if you're planning on doing any racing, you can count me out, Skywalker. Tatooine is no academy, and you're no star pilot.
Not yet, anyway. Well, I adjusted the thrust sequence for extra boost. You better hang on to your seat.
It's worth now saying something about the sound itself for the project. The sound, well, what listeners can expect to hear, I think, is fairly extraordinary material in sound terms. The film was blessed with a genius, really, working on the sound score, a man called Ben Burtt, who created all of the sound. I mean, this is somebody who will go and spend 2 weeks on a ship somewhere recording absolutely every sound that ship makes and cataloging it and then building up the particular sound for the Millennium Falcon from 70, you know, different sound sources and mixing them together to create one cue that may be only one of 20 elements of sound in a scene that is only 1 minute long. You know, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about an incredible degree of sophistication in terms of the way the actual sound elements are created in the film. We, thank goodness, have access to that and are using the original sound from the film, the original music.
I feel the successful soundtrack in a motion picture is one which goes unnoticed.
Sound designer Ben Burtt.
That is, the average person attends the film, and they never doubt the fact that those objects and places in the film, there was no question that they were just mic'd there on the set, right? Or they existed in space, or they existed on some planet, or something like that. I go around with a tape recorder. I record things in my apartment, or in houses, or on street corners, or in factories. I feel very strongly about the fact that to suspend people's disbelief, to make them accept those things in Star Wars that don't exist, you have to, in a sense, use very familiar sounds. They may not be identifiable by people. They may not know that that's really an electric mixer or that's really an elephant roaring. But the fact is, those sounds originated in a real acoustic world, and consequently, they have all the complexity and characteristics that real sounds have. You know, real functioning things.
No, that will be more than satisfactory. I'm not looking for anything elaborate, Chewbacca. Just quick passage to Alderaan.
He doesn't like you, boy. I don't either. You just watch yourself.
Sorry.
Chewbacca, is your Captain Solo available to discuss terms of hiring?
Wanted men, sonny. I've got the death sentence on me in 12 solar systems.
Oh, I'll be careful.
Pardon me a moment, Chewbacca.
You'll be dead.
Just a moment, please, my friend. This little one here isn't worth the effort. Come, let me buy you and your companion there something to drink.
Stay out of this, Grandpa. I'll fix you when I finish with this little fool. Now for you,
No blasters! No blasters!
Hey, that old man, he just about sliced Rope Boy in half.
And he lopped Sharky's arm clean off.
Luke, are you hurt?
Here, let me help you up.
Hey, you, the band, who told you could take a break? Get back to work. Show's over, everybody.
Are you all right, Luke?
I knocked my head on something, but I'll be okay.
Hey, some of you get those bodies out of here. Go on, or you'll never get another free drink from me.
Ben, I've never seen anything like that in my life. Your lightsaber
was... It's a last resort, Luke. Never forget that. Now, this is...
Well, the lightsaber is a combination, really, of two sounds. One is a... There was an old motion picture projector at USC that while I was a student there, we used for our screenings. It was an old projector from the 1930s, and it had a particular sort of old-style electronic interlock motor on it, and when you turned it on and just let it idle, it made a very nice humming sound. And then one day I was fooling around and I was recording the sound of the picture tube on the back of my television set. That is just a sort of sputtering whir. If you ever get really close to the back of your TV set and listen to your tube, it makes an interesting sort of humming sound as well. Well, the recording of that sound plus the projector noise were blended together, and that became the basic sound for the sword as a steady sound. And from that, I was able to derive the various sounds of the swords in motion.
Ben Burtt also created the voice and the personality of one of Star Wars' most popular characters, the little droid, R2-D2.
R2 is a combination of both. He has an electronic side to his personality, that is his voice, and he has an organic side. And the electronic sound is that component originates with a synthesizer. It's one of the few instances in which I actually use one. The other half of R2's character, the character of his voice, is organic. There's sounds of little water pipes being twisted and blowing through whistles and various things of that sort. And it's kind of a tabletop full of little gimmicks. And there's bits of sound there that I make, baby-like sounds, whimpers and whistles and purring sounds. Those organic sounds are taken and mixed with the electronic sounds and interspersed with them such that you don't get the impression of it being all organic or all electronic. You get a nice blend, which really works well for R2 because he is part machine, but he has, of course, a very, you know, human, in a sense, personality.
What do we want to do next here?
The more I have used Ben's little world of sound, not little, it was a big job creating it, but the more I've used that world of sound, the more I've been impressed with it. The sound continues to amaze me that it works as well as it does, and so it's fun to work with.
In a sophisticated 24-track recording studio at Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul, post-production sound mixer Tom Vigley reviews the R2-D2 tape and a vast collection of dialogue, music, and sound, searching for just the right elements to bring Star Wars to life on radio. Vigley goes about the time-consuming task of piecing the series together, scene by scene.
Yeah, it is a puzzle. It's a puzzle that you walk into a room that has a bunch of equipment in it, and a big box full of tapes, and a piece of paper that says that this is called a script that is, in this case, in many scenes, a very rudimentary roadmap for what's supposed to happen. And you start putting the puzzle together, and you start at
well, Big Zane here, Wormy. Hey, you want to try and keep up with me?
I think so.
Huh?
Me?
What are you scared, Wormy?
Maybe this one's all right.
Yeah. All right. Well, you're on.
That's better.
Boy.
Sounds
Wormy
fine to me.
The
other takes.
That's gonna be a slaughter. Well, then you can ride with Fixer, Deke.
Yeah. In the last takes, it had developed into such a major confrontation. It sort of. It was Hamlet suddenly. It's better. It's much better that one. It's fine.
Okay. Good. 2 days ago, I sat, just to give you an example of tedious work, meaning very time-consuming, very detailed, one thing at a time until you get it the way you like it. There's a scene in episode one, which is Luke out working with a Treadwell droid fixing moisture evaporators on the farm, and it creates a little bit of a world for Luke and his work around the farm, and the droid breaks down, as droids tend to do. Now, the scene as it was recorded in Los Angeles is Mark Hamill on microphone reading his lines and vocalizing effort. Okay, so he was able to, you know, there were certain sound cues written into his script so he could see, you know, and obviously this scene was rehearsed and John directed it in terms of where to leave a pause and, okay, at this point you're turning a bolt.
Boy, how does Uncle Owen expect me to keep these junk heaps running? Treadwell, clamp these two leads together while I splice them. No, you idiot. Will you use your insulated arm? Oh, release! Back off! What I wouldn't give to be on another planet.
But that's all that existed for the scene. It was a dumb old monophonic recording of the actor. I mean, now, of course, the actor is most of the scene and is the most important part of the scene. But over the course of the better part of a day, by adding the Treadwell droid, which is the droid that Luke is working with, his voice, his movements. Working on the moisture evaporator, Luke's footsteps, wind, music, etc., 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 the scene develops. Now that's a case where sound works very well.
Hey, Treadwell, come hold this junction plate in place while I torque it down, will you? That's it. That ought to do it. Now, let's give this old relic a try. Nothing. Boy, how does Uncle Owen expect me to keep these junk heaps running? Treadwell, clamp these two leads together while I splice them. No, you idiot. Will you use your insulated arm? Release! Back off! What I wouldn't give to be on another planet. Any planet.
That was very tedious. I mean, that scene lasts maybe a minute and 20 seconds, and it took a day to put it together, not to record it, but just to put it together from the pieces. That's probably, most people might define that as being tedious. Ultimately, I love it, especially if you can stand back, if over the course of the project you can stand back and say, yeah, that works okay, and sort of smile about it, then it's really worth doing.
You maniac, where are my macro binoculars? Well, I know I left them in there someplace. Ah, here they are. Now, let's see. Yeah. There's two ships out there, all right. Two of them at least. And they're firing on each other. Well, it's incredible. Boy, they're really going at it out there. Come on, Treadwell. Get yourself over to the land speeder. I've got to get into Anchorhead and tell Fixer about this. Well, get it in gear, will ya? Okay, stay put then. I'll pick you up on the way home.
We're really working with absolutely superb material. And I think are able to create, visual pictures, honestly, that are really extraordinary. I mean, have a high degree of richness and detail. And in terms of high fidelity listening, I mean, we're talking about hopefully people at any rate listening in stereo, perhaps listening with headphones, and certainly listening on very sophisticated equipment. I mean, it will reward that kind of attention because it's getting that kind of attention in terms of its production. We're spending an immense amount of time on that because we feel it's important, because we feel the standards have already been established, and it's our responsibility to meet them.
Director John Madden. Ben Burt, the sound designer.
Obviously, radio drama has a lot to compete with, you know, and people are so accustomed, you know, to television and films and whatever that to make approaches to an audience with a dramatic presentation, which is strictly sound, is unusual. The potential for radio drama would depend on the development of a style which is not like the older radio dramas used to be, and not just an imitation of the soundtrack of, you know, soundtracks of movies, as if you're just playing a movie without the bulb and the projector on, but coming up with a very involving way of engaging the audience's attention. I think this radio drama has that potential.
Overall, the most important thing that I think I would hope that it will bring about is to really awaken people to the idea of what radio can do with the dramatic form, particularly, of what an incredible experience it can be. Anybody who's ever listened to radio drama will testify to the fact that a play that you hear on radio will be in your mind, you know, 12 years later, you'll remember it vividly. And the reason that you remember it vividly is because you've done the work, is because it lives in your imagination. A phrase has come to mind in working on this project, which is, you may think you've seen the movie, wait till you hear it.
The making of Star Wars for radio, a fable for the mind's eye, was produced by Minnesota Public Radio for National Public Radio, with funds provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The making of Star Wars for radio was written and produced by Dale Connolly, with technical direction by Tom Wilmoth. Executive producers, Rick Lewis and John Murley. Special thanks to Greg Barron, Lynn Cruz, Penny Hain, David Littleton, Linda Murray, Mel Saar, David Schneider, and Fred Wasser. I'm Bob Aronson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.